Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to this Move the Sticks Monday. I'm Brent Lewis here with our former NFL scouts, our lead draft analyst, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, where we own takeaways like the Packers and Aaron Rodgers Bears.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
I mean,
no lies have been told.
Okay, yeah, thank you. And that is one of those trends, by the way, that we're going to get to here just ahead. But let's begin, like we always do, guys, with our big three here on a Monday. And for that, we go back to Foxborough to begin with the Cowboys. 0-5 when facing Bill Belichick-coached Patriots teams, finally breaking through with that 35-29 overtime win. And this game really decided in the final 7 minutes of regulation and overtime, where we saw five lead changes or ties, which, of course, culminated with the Dak Prescott to CeeDee Lamb walk-off winner in overtime. So let's start this thing here, Bucky, by looking at this Cowboys offense and how the Patriots tried to defend them and how that played kind of into the Cowboys' hands here. As you see, Dak Prescott now 7 games with 400-plus passing yards and 3-plus passing touchdowns. It puts him up there in some pretty good company, Buck.
No, it was crazy about Dak Prescott going against the Patriots. The Patriots want to make you play with one hand tied behind your back. Yeah. So coming to the game plan, Bill Belichick wanted to make sure that he took away Ezekiel Elliott, Tony Pollard, and the running game. And they dared Dak Prescott to throw it all over the yard. And, man, he responded in splendid fashion. Because, remember, this is a defense that has really given quarterbacks problems in the past. The complexity of the defense, the constantly changing blitz and coverage, Dak Prescott handled it not only like a pro, but like an MVP player. And when you go back and you think about the way Dak Prescott has played the last 10 games, he has 5 performances over 400-plus yards. And so everyone wanted to see, could Dak Prescott step his game up and play at an elite level? He has done that in superb fashion. And this game against the Patriots was a showcase of all his talent.
And it could have been better. Right?
Oh, my gosh.
Those,
yeah,
the red zone turnovers.
To me, fast eyes. Like, when you watch him, you see fast eyes. He is processing everything so quickly and getting the ball where it needs to go. That's what jumps off the tape to me when you study Dak Prescott. Everything is being processed immediately.
You know what jumps off the tape when you study the Cowboys defense? You know, Trayvon Diggs. 7 interceptions now to match his number 7 on his jersey. And look at, you know, I loved how we went back to Dawson Knox's draft profile going into his NFL career last week. This week, I'm just wondering, does the Trayvon Diggs draft report say anything about ball skills, DJ?
Oh, pull it up, and we can pull it up right now. I can show you when you study him in college, this is what jumped out. You see, he mentioned there ball skills twice. And also as a former wide receiver, you know, he didn't have big-time top speed. That was a knock on him, but he can find and play the ball, which is obviously the most important part of playing the cornerback position. But he's played in that underneath trail technique almost the entire year. He's got 7 picks. When you chart him, 4 of them, he's underneath, just undercutting balls.
Well, the one thing why he can play that is because he's a real wide receiver at heart. And so wide receivers have a natural tendency to accelerate when the ball is in the air. So when you look at Trayvon Diggs, he goes and gets the ball, unlike some defensive backs who have a tough time judging it. Because of his outstanding ball skills, his receiver background, he's a playmaker. That's also why he likes to play off instead of being impressed.
And he's aggressive. Obviously, there's risk taken, and we can put a reel together of some of those big plays he's given up. But that's proper team building. When you have an offense that's going to score a bunch of points, it's like a college game. Just steal us a couple possessions, and you're going to win a lot of ball games. So that aggressive approach works with this Dallas Cowboys team.
And here's the thing. I don't know that that should have been a pick. I thought that was a pretty good ball by Mac Jones. Maybe could have been a little bit more on Kendrick Bourne. Yeah. It was out in front a little bit. I think it may be middle of the field in that situation. You'd like to see that ball a little bit more on the receiver. But, man, that's a tough one to put on Mac Jones right there. We'll get to Mac Jones' rookie report card here in a moment. But for the Patriots, the thing that struck me was they went absolutely quiet after those 2 first-quarter touchdowns. They didn't score again until about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So they went about 40 minutes with nothing. In fact, in that time span, they ran like 21 plays, and you can't have that type of quiet offense. Now, thankfully, their defense bailed them out with some of those turnovers, but they weren't able to do anything with it. So here's the thing now. We're talking about the Patriots. Well, they were competitive. They were competitive here in this game, had a chance to win this game.
That's now, a different conversation than I'm used to hearing coming out of New England.
That's what I'm saying, right? How do we kind of reconcile to the Brady years?
I feel like we're getting some moral victories here for the Patriots. I don't remember. When did the Patriots get moral victories? This is a team, obviously, with their success. I know they're playing with a young quarterback, but they tried to use that opportunity with the young quarterback on a rookie deal to spend some money, build out the rest of this roster. And, Buck, let's be honest. If Houston doesn't have the worst punt that we've ever seen with that, what they were trying to do in that game.
It's
a 1-5 team right now, if that's not the case.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, and it speaks to the talent or lack thereof that is on this roster at times. Even though they committed so much money to the offseason, in the offseason to the free agents, they haven't been able to upgrade where they need to upgrade. And not about the defense. The defense is fine, but offensively.
They're
slow. Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Aguilar, there's no one that you come into the game saying, these guys scare me, so they don't command double teams. It doesn't create opportunities for others. And when you're not able to run the football like they want to, it just makes it a very, very half-court basketball.
Yeah.
That's what you're playing if you're Mac Jones. You're playing half-court basketball in the YMCA.
Let's move on here on the Big Three. Let's get to our second game of the day here on this Move the Sticks Monday. And we'll go back to Cleveland. Had the two back-to-back Heisman Trophy winning number one overall picks dueling at quarterback with Baker Mayfield and the Browns, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. But for both teams, it was really more of a headline of who wasn't there, right? Key players and coaches missing from both sides. But you saw some turnovers in this one. You saw Kyler Murray hit four touchdowns. Arizona able to rise above the adversity in the 37-14 win here. Still the NFL's only unbeaten. And I want to take this, we're going to talk Kyler Murray here in just a second, DJ, but I was talking to James Palmer for the NFL Inside Report podcast, and James was telling us about how he had some insight on the Cardinals were really looking to get a little bit more out of Kyler Murray from an ownership standpoint of the team and of the offense. Man, it felt like it really paid off, and they're starting to see that a little bit more without Cliff Kingsbury on the sideline. Murray still shined.
Yeah, he's dialed in. I mean, he's playing at a very high level, but I think when you look at how this offense is built, it is, they're going to spread you from sideline to sideline. In an era where we see the Shanahan system with all these bunched formations, they are going to spread you out, and then you want to blitz them. It makes it easier to identify and to replace. And what I'm talking about is when you see a blitzer, they throw right behind the blitzer, Buck. They have you spread out sideline to sideline. Wherever the pressure comes from, that's where the ball's going. And now he's got guys that can make plays once the ball is in their hands. It was impressive to watch. I saw this Browns team in person. I know they've got a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
But that was a thrashing. That's a talented Browns team.
And Bucky, I just want to call attention. We had it on the bottom of the screen there. Dude's got a darn near perfect passer rating against the blitz this season. I know stats aren't everything, but that's something.
Yeah, that is something. And when you think about Kyler Murray, what he's doing is he's doing what the Browns want to see from Baker Mayfield in terms of being able to shoulder more responsibility when you don't have all the pieces around you in place. Look, you don't have Nick Chubb. Kareem Hunt goes out. You're missing pieces on the offensive line. This is where you want your franchise quarterback to make a wreck. Get the ball out of hands quicker. Make some plays. Find a way to elevate the talent around him. And right now, it's a continuing trend. We have not seen Baker Mayfield being able to elevate the team when everything isn't right. And so when you're the Browns, you're having an opportunity to see this is what it could look like if we pay him more than what he can deliver when it comes to the production and the performance.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, things get even worse here for the Browns. So just what do they do to kind of steady the ship here? They sit 3-3 and they're 3 days away from kicking off week 7.
This feels weird saying this, but this is such a big moment for them. This Thursday game, the schedule starts to lighten up a little bit. If they can steal a win, they're at home on a Thursday against a Denver team that's reeling. Come out there. I know your running backs are beat up. I know you're missing some guys, but they should still be able to control the line of scrimmage. So if they can control the line of scrimmage, play a clean game and just find a win, buy themselves 10 days of time to kind of regroup and get refreshed, get some guys back. They can go on a run here when you look at the schedule, but man, this is a huge Thursday night game for the Browns.
Well, and it kind of goes back to like how we judge the talent that we've talked about with Cleveland with the results that we've seen. And can we blame that all on injury, or are there some other issues that we need to point to here?
Well, I mean, look, their injury list is long and there are premier players on there. But when you look out there at that defense and you see Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney, let's go. Let's take over the game. Let's dominate.
And they need to figure out that secondary too, because there's
enough
talent back there.
Communication is terrible. I'm convinced they're playing with earplugs in the back. Because there's no communication.
No communication, but ultimately it falls at the feet of the quarterback. At some point, you want to see the quarterback kind of fix it when things aren't right. When we think about Joe Burrow, everything's not perfect in Cincinnati, but the Bengals are finding a way to get to the winner's circle. Think about Justin Herbert. At times, it hasn't been perfect for the Chargers, but they find a way to get it done. And that's what separates the good from the great quarterbacks in this league. And so even though Baker Mayfield is nursing an injury, you want to see him be able to take more ownership of this offense and help them get to where they want to go.
And that's not a hot take, Bucky. You've been following that trend line now for weeks, and we've kind of continued to see it.
All because it's time to settle up on what are you going to pay him.
Exactly.
Are you going to welcome him into the $40 million club with Josh Allen and some of those other guys, or are you going to hold the line and hold firm? Because if you pay him more, then you have to figure out how to operate with less.
Exactly. Okay. So let's continue here. Big three, game number three. Let's go to the AFC West, where the Raiders had plenty of reasons to pack it in. on Sunday to lose after what they went through this week with the Gruden email scandal and subsequent resignation. But they did just the opposite, coming together for a resounding win over a divisional foe in Denver. Derek Carr unleashing the Raiders offense once again to stop that two-game losing streak with the 34-24 win in a game that did not feel nearly as close as that score might suggest. And Bucky, what did you make of the way the Raiders were really able to galvanize for a crucial win at this juncture of the season?
Look, man, I think everyone in leadership did a really good job, starting with Mike Mayock taking over the press conference immediately after the resignation. He kind of set the tone for how the team was going to proceed going forward. Then Rich Bisaccia had taken over special teams coach. And I'm actually glad to see a special teams coach get an opportunity to be a head coach. No one has the pulse of the team like the special teams coach. He not only works with all of the players, offense and defense, but he delegates responsibilities to the coaches. Because of that, I think he's perfectly suited to handle the CEO responsibilities of being a head coach. And what I thought you saw was a team that played a clean football game because everyone was doing their job and he wasn't overstepping his bounds as the interim head coach.
And look, Bisaccia wasn't the only one that had a new role. Now, while Greg Olsen might be the offensive coordinator, he wasn't the play caller and hasn't been since he's been in Vegas there with the Raiders with John Gruden, who has called the plays since returning to the sideline there for the Raiders. And everyone, to a man, was very complimentary of the job that Greg Olsen did. Now, it's not the first time he's ever called plays, but it is the first time that he's done it, I think, since he was with the Jaguars, and Derek Carr was complimentary, Henry Ruggs, Kenyon Drake, and we saw the deep ball again come to fruition here for Derek Carr and the Raiders. And look, this is the second best game of Carr's career on the deep ball, second most deep passing yards in his career in the next-gen stats era, second only to that game against the Chiefs that they won in KC. And the common thread there, DJ, was Henry Ruggs.
Yeah, he's averaging a league-best 22.3 yards per catch. You go back into that draft, remember, they had the pick of all those wide receivers, and CeeDee Lamb's played well, so they got some grief for that early on. You know, we'll see, Jerry Jeudy wasn't in that game for the Denver Broncos. Yeah. Could have gone Justin Jefferson. All those guys have played well, and I think Ruggs last year was just trying to find himself. Had a little injury early in the season. Now they're starting to see that Tyreek Hill-esque speed that he possesses. And, man, when you get a guy to take the top off the defense like he does, it opens up everything else for everyone else. So, to me, it's been a good year to look back on that draft and say, okay, we get it.
Way to work for the Raiders there, stopping that two-game losing streak, putting all the negativity aside and finding their fourth win of the season. Now, what, tied for first place in the AFC West?
Yep.
Not bad for the Raiders. Now, meanwhile, for the Broncos, they have followed up their 3-0 start with a three-game losing skid. And one of the main reasons, Bucky, that you went to Teddy Bridgewater as the quarterback here was to take care of the football. And now he's not doing that. So what do we make of this QB situation?
No, look, he's not taking care of the football because this is a team that should have been governed and led by their defense. And defensively, they've been okay. Not what we thought they would be when you have Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. But offensively, this should have been a situation where Teddy Bridgewater is the game manager. Take care of the football. Make sure the offense is in the right situation. Play calls three or four times a game, make a play. And he's been unable to do that. The numbers on the surface, oh, that's great. He had a 300-yard game. Four turnovers. We understand that the biggest deciding factor in football is the turnover margin. And when you have a negative four, a minus four, it is hard to win games. Teddy Bridgewater is contributing to their woes, and he has to play better for this team to get back on track.
Yeah, I know. Look, we're coming up on, what, Halloween, then we've got Thanksgiving, and then we've got Christmas.
It's
but to me, this, I'm kind of in an Easter theme here because I feel like the Denver
ahead.
Broncos are like the Atlanta Falcons. They've got good players. When you look at Kyle Pitts and Pat Surtain, they are still hunting for that Easter egg that contains a quarterback of the future. They do not have that guy on campus. And so that's going to be interesting as we look forward in these draft classes. And right now, I know it's early, but it doesn't look like this is a great quarterback class. They don't have their guy.
Right.
They were hopeful the rest of their team was going to be so good that they could afford Teddy Bridgewater's brand of football, but I don't think they're at that point. I don't think they're going to be at that point anytime soon.
Right. So now you're like, all right, so if Patrick Surtain becomes the best cornerback in NFL history, maybe you get away with this, but then you wonder, you know, like what could have been with Justin Fields or Mac Jones who were
available.
There's
two types of teams, right? Those that have their quarterback and those that are trying to find him, and they find themselves in the latter group.
Okay. Built as the game of the week between two 4-1 teams, two of the best QBs in the league. But it was Lamar Jackson and the Ravens making this a one-sided affair. 34-6, the final over the Chargers, taking advantage of LA's last-ranked rush defense. 187 yards on the ground. Bad time for Justin Herbert's worst game of the season as well. This was a team that was just 3 of 12 on third down. DJ, just 208 yards total for this high-power Chargers offense. Just felt like they were out of sync the whole way. You were there, obviously. Yeah. We're going to get to the Ravens' run game here in just a second, but let's start with what went wrong here for the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is all about their offense. I mean, we'll get to the run game later, but the Chargers minus a couple linebackers and a defensive tackle and the Ravens' run game, you could foresee that happening with the Chargers' issues against the run. But their offense, I was shocked that they were not more productive in this game. And really, Justin Herbert was never able to get into a rhythm. You see a pressure here. I think there was a ton of pressure generated. There were some overload blitzes that the Ravens brought that gave him some trouble, as this one right here. But really, just some misfires, not on the same page. I didn't understand why he kept attacking Marlon Humphrey. When you look at this secondary, Anthony Averett has had his struggles. And on key third and fourth downs, the ball was getting forced towards Marlon Humphrey's side, which, you know, was a curious decision at that. And he wasn't on the same page as Mike Williams. Mike Williams missed the whole week of practice nursing that knee injury. And I thought they were a little out of rhythm. But, you know, look, make no excuses about it. The Baltimore Ravens, after getting torched by the Indianapolis Colts the week before, came out and played a really, really good ball game.
All right, Bucky, let's get to the other side of things here for the Ravens. It was a bad matchup on paper for the Chargers defense, last ranked, you know, rush defense against this high-powered Ravens rushing attack, and it proved to be just that. How are the Ravens able to get it down on the ground?
You know, the Ravens, I will give John Harbaugh and Greg Roman a ton of credit for being stubborn in terms of their refusal to deviate away from the way that they play. This has been an offense that has been really ground-based, a ground-and-pound team that runs a lot of Saturday football concepts, read option, quarterback design, runs, RPOs, and those things, and they have been very successful doing it. And in spite of the noise that talks about this offense being unable to get it done in the playoffs, they continue to do this in the regular season. And because Lamar Jackson commands so much attention, it really doesn't matter who the running back is. Lamar Jackson is QB1, but he's also RB1, and when he's RB1, he allows the complimentary running backs to also get off by being able to control everything with a sleight of hand.
One of the things we do on Thursday Night Football when we're calling those games for Amazon on that stream is we talk about unicorns and, like, who are guys that you can't replicate in the NFL. Obviously, Lamar Jackson is a unicorn. They have another unicorn on that offense. It's Patrick Ricard. Mm. What he does, he's a 300-pound fullback, and they were able to get him up to linebackers repeatedly. A couple times they got him up to Chris Harris, who was playing safety in this ball game. You got a 300-pound fullback unencumbered working up to the second and third levels, and he's really good in space. He is a unique player for that offense.
And how about the three running backs that scored touchdowns for the Ravens on the ground here, none of which...
All of which were on your fantasy team 5 years ago.
Yes, exactly. They were fantastic fantasy running backs 5 years ago. Le'Veon Bell, Devontae Freeman, and Latavius Murray, who was banged up a bit in this game. Here's a question, though, for the Chargers. Can they get the run game fixed on the defensive side of the ball?
Look, when you talk to them, it's all about fit, right? It's all about making fits. And so you're like, oh, do they need another defensive lineman? Do they need this? Do they need that? It is a group effort in playing the run in this defensive scheme. So when one guy's out of whack, it doesn't work. The hope is it's new. This is game six in this system. The hope is as you get later in the season, they'll figure it out and get better.
Back to you quickly here for the Ravens prospects moving forward. Does this feel like a Ravens team now better suited for more playoff longevity based on what we've seen here these first 6 weeks?
Well, I mean, Lamar's throwing the ball really well. Yeah. And they've added Bateman. It was his first chance getting out there, did some good things.
Catch,
so I like how they're growing and evolving in the passing game. When I look at their roster, though, Buck, I see some holes still on that offensive line. I see some other holes out there in the secondary. The Chargers did not exploit them in this game, but those would be my two causes for concern once they get into the playoffs.
Well, look, it's a narrow path for them to win. They have to play a certain way. As much as we on the outside will say, hey, they need to throw it, they need to push it, their offensive line is not built to play that way. They're built to play going forward, not going backwards. And so they have to play from ahead. They need to play downhill with the lead so then they can throw when they want to throw instead of when they have to throw. But it's a very dangerous team because number 8 can turn it up and play at an MVP level at any game. And in a one-and-done scenario, look, man, it's hard to bet against that guy.
I'm with you on that, especially when you get that run game rolling like they do there in Baltimore.
Sometimes you black out on the field. In a good way. I definitely blacked out. I looked up in the stands, and in the front row, all I saw was a woman giving me a double bird. I'm not sure exactly what came out of my mouth next.
Well, there is some stats, some facts to back up that ownership as we kick off Elite Eight, looking at some hashtag trending topics through this 6 weeks of the NFL season that again revealed themselves this week. And Bucky, let's start with the man of the hour at Soldier Field, which of course was Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers continues to own the Chicago Bears. Look, nothing makes me happier being a former Packer than to see that ownership take place on the field. And he's done it. And I think the one thing about Aaron Rodgers and what he's been able to do, this started off ugly for the Green Bay Packers early in the year. We had all the offseason turmoil. But when you watch this team play, they're beginning to kind of find their stride. It's still not necessarily what I call Super Bowl caliber. But, man, they're playing really good football. They're sitting at 5-1. This is a good team.
Yeah, look, he didn't say anything that wasn't true. Look at those numbers. It's ridiculous how good he's been. I bet you just about every team he's played pretty well against, but the Bears especially. Look, to me, there's certainties in life. Death, taxes, Rhett wearing jeans are a little too tight. And then I would say, finally, it's Cooper Kupp doing his thing on a weekly basis. And him and Matthew Stafford have found their way on the same page. And this is another one where he goes 9 for 130 and 2 touchdowns. Especially down in the red area, he just, I don't want to say he's uncoverable, but man, when he has a two-way go, when he's lined up inside, as you see the no-looker here from Matthew Stafford, he's just an impossible cover, man. I don't know what you're supposed to do against him. He's too quick. He's too crafty.
He is so crafty. He's such a good route runner, man. I just love watching him play. He just finds a way to get it done consistently, week in, week out. Everyone knows the ball is going his way, and they still can't stop it.
What are you waiting for? Are you going to jump in here?
I'm sorry. I was just entranced by watching Cooper Kupp again.
I figured.
I was just like, wow.
I thought the pants had cut off your circulation.
No. There are other certainties in life, like DJ's dad jokes and T.Y. Hilton going off against the Houston Texans. T.Y. Hilton, first game of the season this year, comes back in, well, bombs away for Carson Wentz. Who you think he's targeting against the Texans? Wow. Yeah, it's
Give me the T.Y.
T.Y., 4 for 80 in this one. He now has a full season's worth of work in his career against the Texans. I should say a full season's worth of production. Almost 1,800 yards and 11 touchdowns in his career against the Texans.
I feel like the Colts might own the Texans as much as Aaron Rodgers has owned the Bears.
It feels very similar. Yes, indeed. All right, Bucky, getting back to you here. What do you got?
Okay, so Tom Brady and I, we're kind of close in age, and I know what it's like. So watching the Thursday night game with DJ, I just kind of made an observation that, look, Tom Brady probably shouldn't play night games because he gets a little sleepy in the middle of the game. And so I felt like in that game, he took a little nap, then woke up the fourth quarter because he's old like I am, and he just kind of found himself. And when you look at this offense, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, playoff Lenny, it took them a while to find their way the second and third quarter. So after he woke up from his nap, he got it going. They finished it off, and I'm looking at this Bucs team, and, man, they are just kind of rounding into form as a Super Bowl contender, exactly what you expect for a team that's coming off a Super Bowl win.
I think the way you described it, Buck, was that you're back in your chair, a little bit of drool coming down the chin and like a potato chip on your chest, and you wake up and like, oh, it's still gone.
Oh, this is game still.
Let's see what happened here.
I guess I need to reinsert myself into the game. That's what Tom Brady does.
I'm going to keep another trend going, and that is, I don't know if we ever really talk about the Minnesota Vikings. They play sneaky, entertaining games each and every week. And Kirk Cousins has been a really good closer for them, being able to finish out games. Kirk's having a really good year. I feel like nobody's really talking about them at all. Every game they play, it feels like it comes down to the very end. He's protecting the football. He's making the opportunistic plays down the field when they present themselves. You know, he's just quietly going about his business and playing at a very high level.
Vikings fans running low on that blood pressure meds. I mean, they have absolutely had some heart pounding finishes here. Just when you think they're out, they come right back in here. No
sneaky
question.
Good watch. I encourage you, watch the Vikings on a Sunday.
Indeed. I get to watch them on NFL Game Day Live most Sundays in the early window, and they provide some fireworks at the end of games for sure. And so does my man Ja'Marr Chase, talking about fireworks.
Oh, yeah. Oof.
Wow. The best deep ball wide receiver in football. Not the best rookie deep ball receiver. The best, period. More receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns than anybody. They all lead the NFL. Has had another couple here against the Lions. Oh, and remember that Penei Sewell versus Ja'Marr Chase debate for the Bengals?
Yeah.
We saw that kind of play out on the field. I think Sewell gave up a couple of sacks to Trey Hendrickson, and then, you know, Ja'Marr Chase might have had more pancakes than Penei Sewell in this game, too.
Wow.
Sorry.
That was probably you're just rubbing it in
cheat.
At this
that was
point.
A cheat.
Rubbing it in.
That's my bad.
Yeah.
I haven't watched every single snap of Penei Sewell, but I did see that pancake block from Ja'Marr Chase, as did the world. He's going to be a heck of a player.
Oh, he's already a heck of a player. I mean, I didn't know that he would be able to get deep as often as he has, but he's been fantastic. Another guy who's been fantastic continues to be. How about T.J. Watt from the Pittsburgh Steelers? You watched the Sunday night game, and when they needed plays, the defensive player of the year candidate, T.J. Watt, delivered. 7 tackles, 2 sacks, came up with a forced fumble to really sealed the game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it's the effort and energy and the way that he's able to get it done. So a team that we kind of put out in the pasture and said, oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to be able to get it done. They've climbed their way back to respectability. They're sitting at 500. And as long as T.J. Watt and his defense is able to step up and make plays, they are going to be a tough out.
Yeah, I think this is like the opposite of buyer's remorse. This is like buyer's celebration after you give him that contract, the way he's played.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to go to Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a trend. They're going to be there at the end of the year. Even though Patrick Mahomes has had some turnovers, didn't start off well in this game against Washington, they find their way into the winner's circle in this one, and you know they're going to be there at the end of the year. This team's in the playoffs every year since 2015. And they can kind of go through their struggles, kind of find their way defensively, figure some things out. They made a lineup change in the secondary. But trust me, this is trending in the direction it always trends. They're going to get into the tournament. That's going to happen.
Yeah, and how about a shutout on defense in the second half? I mean, like, that's a major improvement as well for a defense
that has really
struggled.
A lot of tinkering and toying, trying to figure out how to make that thing work on defense.
Okay, so we don't have to hit the panic button on the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes at the helm. But that is what was trending around the NFL in your Elite Eight following your Week 6 Sunday. It's one of those segments we give you each and every week here on your Move the Sticks Monday. Back with you now, Rhett Lewis, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks. Time for our rookie report cards. Oh, look, there's a Jaguars win. Come on. All right. Lead us off with Trevor Lawrence and his grade this week. Come on.
Trevor Lawrence, I'm going to give him a B+. I'm going to give him a B+ because I'm a hard grader. I'm not red just giving away grades. I'm going to give him a B+ because, look, I loved his game management ability, and I loved his ability to execute in a clutch situation. When you watch this game was teetering in the balance, maybe because coaching-wise, they didn't necessarily help him by putting him in great situations to close it out. But he did a great job. Ran a 2-minute drill, understood time, score, situation, did a great job on what they call the slider play. 5 seconds left, threw a quick little slant into LaVisca Chenault, gave them an opportunity to kick a game-winning field goal. This is terrific for Trevor Lawrence to see him make these plays when they need it. And he ended a 20-game losing streak.
DJ, did the Dolphins defense help him out on that 4th-and-8 at the
end? Yeah, I did not understand what they were doing defensively on that one, by the way.
That was a great play.
It was a good play. I mean,
you're going to give everybody a free release and give them a free 8 yards, kick the game winner.
Well, I think the error is not knowing the rule where they should have let him roll around so all the clock
don't touch him.
Out.
Yeah, don't touch him. Another topic. I thought Trevor Lawrence made about 6 throws in this game. When I watched, I was like, whoa, okay, these are real big-time throws. These are number one overall pick type throws, under pressure, over-under throws. I mean, it was – you can watch that game and you can dream on what you're going to get with the Jacksonville Jaguars going forward.
Look, and I think for Trevor, this season is going to test his mental capacity to deal with adversity because he hasn't really dealt with it. Yep. But all signs point towards him being – absolutely fine in that category, in addition to all the ridiculous physical traits that he's already displayed. I'm going to get you to Mac Jones here. You ready for a nice grade?
I already know what it is. I already wrote it down.
A-minus.
You slapped the minus on
Mac Jones. They lost. All right, I'm not going to give him an A in a loss. I'm going to give him an A-.
I'm pretty sure, we could go to the tape on this maybe later. I promise you have given him an A in a loss this year. They've lost 4 games. You give it A every week.
Every week is an A.
Let's just worry about this week. Okay, you see the first note there, building the second story. That's what they're doing right now in this Patriots offensive construction story with Mac Jones. They built the foundation in the preseason. They dealt with the playbook. He mastered it. First couple of weeks, they were kind of framing out that first story, right? The short, quick passing. He was efficient, getting the ball out of his hands. Now they're moving into the second floor. That intermediate pass game he has really started to excel at, pushing the ball a little bit further down the field. Now, we're not seeing those true deep shots yet. We don't have the roof on just yet here for Mac Jones, but we're getting there. And look, you're going to have a little live by the sword, die by the sword when you start having some of those deeper throws. Like we said, the long touchdown to Kendrick Bourne should have been picked, and maybe the Trayvon Diggs interception shouldn't have been. So you got some give and take there, but I think we've seen some good with the bat.
I've been really impressed with Mac Jones, and to me, his eyes do not drop. Under pressure, under heavy duress, his eyes do not drop. I agree with you, Greg. I just like giving you a hard time.
I know.
No, he played really well in that ballgame.
He did. All right, let's get on to Justin Fields.
Yeah, let's go Justin Fields. Yeah. I'll jump back in here. Justin Fields, to me, was a B when you watch him. I thought it was a solid game for him. So I'm seeing growth. I'm seeing him getting better as the season goes along. I know the points aren't there, but I saw some creativity, which I'd wanted to see using his athleticism. I saw some explosive drive throws and a variety of throws. He threw a layered ball down the left sideline. It was a hole shot, but he did a nice job of getting it up and down. The interceptions he has, they jumped. I'm watching the tape. How is that not a penalty? They're clearly offside.
So wipe that one off of his ledger.
But the negative was the bad sacks towards the end of the game. You got to get the ball. You can't take negative plays there. That's something he's just going to learn from it. He's going to grow. But I am seeing, we used the word trending today. He is trending in the right direction for the Bears.
Like to see that as well. What would you see from, what have you kind of felt about Justin Fields so far this season in his few starts here, Bob?
Well, no, I think DJ hit a lot of good points. He has grown. He's continued to evolve and become more comfortable in the position. I want to see him continue to utilize his athleticism. And as the coaches get comfortable with this style quarterback, I want to see them help him out. Put him on the move. Change the spot so the launch point is not always right behind the center. This offensive line is not a great one, so make sure you're a little creative in your protections to protect the quarterback.
So only four rookie quarterbacks this week getting starts. At Trey Lance might have gotten a start, but he's on a bye with Zach the 49ers. Zach Wilson got a bye as well. Let's get on to Davis Mills here with the Texans. And look, this was a tough task in Indianapolis against the Colts here. I think there's some good with Davis Mills.
No way you go below a B.
Whoa! I thought about
Somebody took your pen.
I thought about bumping him up to the B minus.
Oh my goodness.
The interceptions were not good. It's rare that you see a quarterback throw an interception where two defenders have a shot at the pick before intended receiver does. That was one. So that was bad recognition, bad decision on that first interception. The second one was just a poor throw. It was inside and it was underthrown. Here, though, you saw a couple of these throws. He has some real impressive pocket presence and sudden movement to get away from pressure. And then the throws on the run, I was really impressed with. He got some real third down pressure in this game and was actually pretty good.
You're showing a lot of D plus C minus plays for that C plus grade. I'm just saying, you know, you're going to have to coordinate your tapes with your grades. I feel like the paper and the grade are not matching up here.
I think with the Texans, we have to grade a little bit on a curve for the quarterback here specifically. There's clearly less talent on that team than the team that they were playing here in the Colts. And that's going to be the case, unfortunately, for that team for much of
Bucky and I have both signed up to take his class.
But Everybody
needs one of those teachers, don't they? All right, let's go. Time now to kick off our scout stories. So you get a look at your top 12 picks in this past year's draft. So we want to highlight the top 12 picks to kind of see some of the value within these first 12. And look at the value, I think, really, some 9 through 12. Some really good players outside of the top three, outside of the quarterbacks. Some teams did a nice job here. And we're doing that to kind of focus in on the Dolphins, who would have picked number 3 overall. Yeah. That was the pick they earned. They traded that to the 49ers, moved down to number 12. But then, as you see here, they moved back up from 12 to number 6, giving up next year's first rounder to the Eagles. And that's really where we start to take issue with this whole thing. The move back to 12 is fine, especially if you decide you're good with the quarterback.
Yeah.
But then you kind of begin to worry about that move back up to 6 and what it means moving forward.
There was a lot of movement this year in that top 12. Several trades. The Dolphins made 2 of them. Those are the ones we're focusing on here, because I think you can make a case for all the other movement. It all made sense.
Right.
And I think even you mentioned it from the Dolphins standpoint, for them moving back, I thought made total
sense. Think of the players they could have gotten.
3 to 12.
Michael Parsons, Rashawn Slater up in there.
Really good football players there. The question was, okay, you wanted to come back up for a wide receiver at that point in time. I don't know there's the value there. And Jaylen Waddle's playing well. He's going to be a good football player. Mm-hmm. But they could have stood where they were and got a good pick and held on to all those. Now the season gets away from you. I think that's the number 3 pick right now in next year's draft that will be going to Philadelphia. So in essence, Philadelphia comes out of it with Devontae Smith and a top 5 pick.
Yeah.
And you come out of it with Jaylen Waddle. Like, that's not going to look good on them when you look in hindsight here, Buck. If this is the way this eventually goes, you can't make that move up there and part with the one for anything other than a premier position. We're talking about quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, corner. Those are the 4 positions. Outside that, you can't make that move.
No, you can't do that. And I've argued for a long time about wide receivers in the first round, but particularly in the top 10, you just can't do it. It's just so hard. Unless they're a special player. We're talking about the Julio Jones A.J. Green, Larry Fitzgerald type, Calvin Johnson type. She talked about gold jacket worthy players. And so when I think about the Miami Dolphins and now what they're going to have to do with the reset, you still have to figure out what do you feel about Tua Tagovailoa. You still have to figure out the rest of the pieces because the offensive line now, what you thought would be a strength, is not. And when I look at a team that many of us thought would be a playoff contender, man, there's a lot of work to do for this team to get back on track. And unless they can somehow turn around in the regular season, man, it's going to be a really interesting offseason.
And I just look at it. And look, they have San Francisco's one next year. So they do have a first-round pick. It's just not their own. And I look at if the season ended today, where they're picking, you look at somebody like a Thibodeau from Oregon, and now you've got Jalen Phillips, who's still trying to figure it out as a rookie.
Right.
But now you've got Jalen Phillips on one side, you've got Thibodeau on the other side. Mm-hmm. I just watched Georgia's defense on the plane ride home yesterday. There's about five dudes you could take from that front seven. But now you can build your line of scrimmage. Once you have the line of scrimmage built, then you can go get all the toys with the skill positions. They aren't good enough on the line of scrimmage to be able to part with a top five pick. For a wideout, you just can't do that.
And so they moved back up from 12 to 6, thinking, all right, for sure three quarterbacks are going top three once we gave up that three pick to the 49ers. So you're thinking, all right, we're either going to get some combination of Pitts, Jamar Chase,
or Waddle.
Or Waddle.
Those are the three. Those are the three guys.
Yeah, and they ended up getting Waddle. And it's not an indictment on Waddle as a player. That's not what we're saying here. But the value means that maybe you would have liked to have had two first-round picks next year to further build up.
And they've got some extra picks. I think they have an extra one in 23 as well. So they've got more picks coming. But man, just an opportunity cost to me. Man, you could have just sat right where you were. Parsons, Slater, they both look pretty good for the Dolphins right now.
Yeah, all those guys. It's unfortunate they didn't have the crystal ball to see how these guys would play, but that's one of the things that we talk about. Picks versus players. You're trying to speculate what someone could be at the next level, and it's hard.
Well, and look, you know, Kadarius Toney ends up being the fourth wide receiver taken,
right? He's done some good things.
And he's done some good things that would have been available there. So I'm not going to say that Jalen Waddle's not going to be a better player, but again, it's just the value thing continues to be something that we come back here. With the Dolphins in those picks. Some marquee moments from your Week 6 Sunday. Hoping for a few more here to close out Week 6 on Monday night. We got the Bills and the Titans here. DJ, what are you looking forward to in this matchup?
I want to see this Bills defensive line and see what they do. This defense has been revamped. They're playing outstanding football. We've seen them get after the quarterback and rush the quarterback. This is going to be a physicality test here against the Tennessee Titans. See Edmonds there at the middle linebacker position, Buck. He can suck it up sideline to sideline. I want to see how the front plays in this one.
Look, man, this is going to be a tough test for the Buffalo Bills because King Henry gets his against everybody. And even though the Buffalo Bills have been playing great defense, it's just a challenge. And because Tennessee Titans know what is at stake, this has to be a game where he gets it 35 times on the ground. And if he's getting it 35 times, that means there's going to be a lot of carnage in the way.
You need to tighten up your chin strap almost
it is
tight
one of those
as
games.
Brett's pants today. That's what we're talking about. This is going to be that type of game.
Really? Going back to fine. But look, I'm with you on this front for the Buffalo Bills. In fact, I'm so into the Buffalo Bills front, I actually selected Gregory Rousseau into my lineup in my individual defensive player fantasy football league today.
Wow.
Yes,
that's
Greg
a line
Rousseau.
Too far. The individual defensive player fantasy.
Come on.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And look, hey, look, we talked a lot about Dawson Knox last week as really emerging as a nice answer to some of the things that the Bills offense is seeing with teams trying to take away Stephon Diggs, who'd been so good this year. You know what's been one of the interesting kind of surprises for the Bills this year was Zach Moss. Down in the red zone especially has really kind of emerged.
They're a very complete football
They really
team.
Are. It was one of those things, that run game was one of those things we really didn't see last year. Starting to see it more for the Bills. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing you guys back here on Move the Sticks. Another couple episodes coming for you later this week. We'll see you back next month.
I'll give you an A for this one.
Yes.